Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. You've heard about Devil's Tower, Wind Cave, Bear Butte. A traveling seminar now called Lakota Lands and Identities takes learners to prominent Lakota places within the boundaries of the 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty. It's an inquiry-based and thoroughly unique learning experience. Joining us now to talk about the program is Dr. Craig Howe. He is the founder and director of the Center for American Indian Research and Native Studies. He is in our studios at Rapid City. Craig Howe, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Let's start with the fact that this is not a tour and these are not tourists. So tell me, what's the goal for this program?
The goal is to try to experience these landscapes and be aware of the events that happened at them in an academic or a scholarly way.
And who is joining you on in the traveling seminar?
We have a wide variety of people that join us on these. It started with the Rapid City Area Schools, the Office of Indian Education, so teachers, educators, and then community leaders, whether they're in business or service industries such as the police department or youth and family services. And then we also have worked with regional health here in Rapid City, so healthcare providers from regional health and also from Indian Health Service.
And is it the second year? Do I have that right?
This is the third year. We just completed the third year of doing them, yes.
And tell me where the idea sort of came from, because it's somewhat unique to get in a bus probably and hit the road and have the classroom moving like that. Where did the idea come from?
I've wondered that myself at times, and I think maybe the long ago roots would be when I was young. You know, I grew up on a horse, so I think this idea of traveling in the land and going places and talking, I think maybe that was part of it. And then even in college, I know at Michigan, I did my office hours on the intercampus bus, so I would travel between the main campus and north campus on the bus and just publish a schedule, and students could get on and off if they wanted to visit with me in motion. And then here, this version, though, came about as a collaboration with the Office of Indian Education in the Rapid City Area Schools District. So we, you know, this idea of getting teachers and community people together, American Indians and non-Indians, collaboratively exploring these landscapes.
So tell me more. Let's go back then. You said you grew up on a horse traveling the land and talking about it. It's a very natural thing for you. That is not how I grew up. So tell me a little bit about that experience and put that in perspective for me. What does that look like?
Well, at that time I was little, and so I always feel sorry for those horses, because my brother and I, we didn't know, we weren't in a saddle, so those horses had to put up with a lot for us guys. But I guess that idea of being in the land and being in places is just, it imprinted deeply. And from adult experiences, this idea of being at these places where we can take scholarship, take inquiry out of these four walls or six surfaces of classrooms and get into the natural environment just seems, it resonates with people. I think with a lot of people, it resonates well.
Do you see people having a hard time adjusting to it, or does it seem to come natural and they slip into the learning process fairly easily?
I think they slip in, but they could be fooling me too. You know, I was a student for a lot of, my grandpa said I must have been a slow learner. I went to school so long. So I know that as students we can, fool the instructors. But all of the participants we've enjoyed working with these last 3 years have been wonderful, and they seem to take a lot out of the experience.
Tell me about where you go and how you chose some of the places that you need to experience and explore.
So all of the places are within just a small portion of the lands that are articulated in the 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty. This is called Lakota Lands and Identities, so it's strictly Lakota landscapes and Lakota events that we're focusing on and trying to draw from events and from location. So events that are important in Lakota history for some reason, and it can be a wide spectrum, And then these places, either where these events happened or that are just inherently important places, those are the set of places that we can deal with. Then it was just a select from among them, so we can present Lakota history and culture as being present here today and into the future. So we deal with sites that resonate or have issues today as well as long ago.
Give me an idea of a place that's just inherently important to Lakota culture, and then we'll talk about some events. But give me an example of a place that just by its nature of existence is significant.
So one place like that might be Peshla. And this is, if you've been there, it's just, there's no remarkable geographical feature. So if you don't know what you're looking for, it'll just look like a natural landscape. There hasn't been a recorded historical event that happened right there. But I think it's one of these places, and people have talked about it as that. It's this place that's in and of itself, it's holy.
Tell me why. If I'm wandering by it and I don't know what it is, I stumble upon it. Tell me why is it a holy landscape?
Well, so, and this is what I've been told, is that this is where the Wakians, or the thunders and lightnings, they visit that place. And by visit, meaning they strike it often.
Okay.
And those people that know in that spiritual way, they can feel that. They can identify these types of places. Those of us that don't know, you know, I wish I could feel those type of experiences, but I cannot. But this is part of this class, is that if we sit in a classroom, whether it's in Rapid City or Vermilion, we cannot be influenced by those places. We have to go to them. And then by being there, we have a chance to be influenced. So that's one of the goals of the traveling seminar.
And in your experience, how are some of the learners influenced by the places that you go? What sort of reactions are they having?
The many reactions are that it's life-changing, and that it's just really, you know, has a strong impact or influence on them, from about that level of impact to this, you know, completely spiritually important or moving type of experience. And we've just really been fortunate to have positive reactions. And I think that's partly because most, if not all, of the participants they're open to learning and experiencing things in this new way.
How do you cultivate that openness? Because you've got some time with them in the in the vehicle before you get there. How do you sort of cultivate that awareness and openness before you reach the next location?
Well, one thing is that we stress what we call the four R's: rigor, reliability, respect, and relevance, that we are going to focus on that right away. Then part of it is treat this classroom as the bus as a classroom, but not your typical boring classroom. Our classroom is structured so that you have to sit by everyone else at least once over the course of the 5 days. So that means we do about 45 switches over the course of those 5 days together. So it keeps us constantly out of our comfort zone, or our little cocooning, where this is my seat, I'm going to sit here by myself. You have to interact with everyone else.
And what kind of reading material? Is it a lecture-based sort of curriculum that you're using? Or how do you get the most out of that 5 days?
We try to do a wide variety of techniques or methods. So, yes, there are some lectures where I stand at the front of the bus and talk to them. And we do Q&A that way. We also have three team members that are on the bus, instructors, teachers, and they sometimes we when we are at a site, we'll organize the participants into three groups, and then, you know, it's about 15 in a group then, and they can do small group discussion. Other times we have the participants interview each other, the person sitting beside them in the bus, and then we have a very extensive course packet that, you know, it's the best case scenarios, people can read it before each day, but the reality is that doesn't happen very much, but at least it's a resource they can go back to now anytime they want.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Dr. Craig Howe. He's the founder and director of the Center for American Indian Research and Native Studies. And we're talking about Lakota lands and identities. It's a traveling seminar that's just wrapped up last week. And I'm wondering, Craig, if you could give us an idea of some event-based visits that you're including in the class.
So one event, for instance, would be the Great Race around the Black Hills, or that created the Black Hills by one account. Another event would be like the killing of Crazy Horse at Fort Robinson. And another event would be this idea of putting deeded land such as Peshlaw into trust, efforts to do that by the Rosebud Sioux tribe today.
Are people bringing their own experiences from their own traditions onto the bus and into the conversation, or are they pretty much just immersed in this Lakota tradition? Are they making those connections between, something in their own family tradition that makes sense?
I think that's the case. And, you know, just from our own experiences, that we can't set those aside. So they're with us all the time, our own experiences, our own viewpoints. And what we try to do is present this information in a way that it's non-confrontational, but it is factual, research-based. And then they can integrate that into their beliefs or their understandings. And once in a while, and we can deviate or change the course of thinking maybe in some people sometimes.
Some of the places on your list of travels have visitor centers or some sort of some sort of interpretation that's been provided by other peoples. How do you evaluate that sort of information and compare it and put it in a broader context? Is that part of what you're doing as well?
Yes, and this is this idea of how are Lakotas being presented in these state parks and national parks, such as, you know, the first day we stop at Wind Cave, and so we look at that visitor center, and then we also stop at Fort Robinson, which is a Nebraska state park, and then on Tuesday, the second day, we stop at Bear Butte, which is a state park, and you mentioned Devil's Tower, which is a national monument. So we have this variety of visitor centers in three different states, and how do they talk about Lakotas? That's what we ask the participants to focus on, not an overview of the entire visitor center, but just find examples of where Lakotas are mentioned in the visitor center, and then what's the context of those mentions.
That has to be interesting. So tell me some specific examples of how Lakota are represented in visitor centers.
Well, so we give them a little bit of a precursor to, you know, how to think critically about, because a lot of times we just don't think about that. We're used to talking about American Indians. And so, you know, this idea of whether or not the plural is used, or do they say the Lakota or do they say Lakotas? And then is the context in the past? Is it in the present? Is it in the future? Are Lakotas active or passive, the way they're represented? Is it positive or negative? You know, all, even the size of the font, the color of the font, the type of the font, all really trying to give them a toolkit of critical thinking about how Lakotas are mentioned. And, you know, it's amazing, like, for instance, at Wind Cave, I think the first mention of American Indians being in the park is 1937.
Oh.
So that's a little late in the time frame that American Indians should be mentioned there.
So I understand past and present and future. Tell me how to think about the Lakota versus Lakotas.
Well, we think this is kind of a basic, and a corollary to it is, like, we do the plurals for even most animals, right? We have cats and dogs and horses and cows. But when it comes to American Indians, usually we use the singular collective, the Lakota, the Navajo, the Ojibwe. And we think that there's a pretty strong correlation between that collective singular and then being able to stereotype and caricature those people. So we really encourage, we always just say, if you have a problem with that, just substitute out, say, Jew or Canadian. And if you would say that sentence in the singular with either of those substitute terms, then you're okay. But if it doesn't sound right, then don't do that with American Indians.
The language matters.
Yes. And then the other thing that's really amazing, if you use the plural, so you have a S, then you can use this thing called an apostrophe. And then you have possession. If you don't use the S, you can't do possession. So it's a really clever way to dispossess American Indians.
I had never thought of it that way before.
You're right.
If you have an S, you can use the possessive. And if you don't, you can't. That's fascinating to me.
And you can do the individual possessive. So I, Craig, I can do apostrophe S about something I own. Or we can do the collective S apostrophe. And, you know, that's the proper way. In English, that is the proper way to write and talk, and we don't teach that.
Give me an idea. If I'm just traveling on my own, I want to go out to Wind Cave. I've never been there. I want to take my family. How do I sort of encourage that critical thinking outside of a classroom when I approach an area that I might not know anything about? I might not know the history of it.
It's really hard. We expect that these agencies and organizations that are for us as citizens should be well-rounded, even-handed, but that's not the case generally. So it takes a lot of work. We just have to do our own research. I don't think there's a simple shortcut I can give, like, okay, here's what you should do. But do question as soon as you get to a place. Not necessarily a person. I would ask the rangers questions, though, but find out, where are American Indians represented in this exhibit or in these visitor centers? And that's the place to start. I mean, we're looking for American Indian viewpoints on these places. All of this landscape in North America has been Indian land for 12,000 years. That's incontrovertible. So there should be a presence, a mention of American Indians at all these places.
What are your hopes going forward when the seminar is over? What are the possibilities that people could take from it and go back into their day-to-day lives as teachers or as public servants? What are they going to get out of it and bring forward?
Well, I'm not... One thing, I guess, that I hope, and I think our team would hope, is it's just how we talk in our everyday conversations. It's a lot of people want to make change in other people, but this idea of making change in ourselves. So the way I speak about American Indians and the way then each of these participants are going to speak about Lakotas to their families and their friends and their, you know, circles of influence, that's where they can make change. We're not encouraging them to try to change Lakotas or change anyone else. Change yourself. And then those people that you have influence over.
Craig Howe, it is always a delight to talk to you. I want to thank you so much for coming in today and having a conversation with us.
It's great to be on again. Thank you very much.
We'll see you next time.
Okay.